Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, August 19th. I'm Ray Graff. It's always great to welcome back Chef Rick Orlando to Studio A. Rick is a famous chef, an entrepreneur, and yes, even a travel guide. And today, Rick wanted to talk about the peak of the harvest and some of the great ways you can preserve those flavors that you only get for a fleeting time in the good weather. If you want to join in the conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org, but you could call 800-348-2551 if you want to speak directly to Rick Orlando. Your calls are coming up on a Food Friday right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday. We talk summer Italian favorites, the tastes of the harvest today, and how to preserve them with Chef Rick Orlando. After 25 years of cooking upstate, Rick now owns the Richter Scale brand of seasonings and condiments and flavor maker spices, the exact seasonings used in his award-winning New World restaurants, and the Richter Scale sauces are his special unique blends. For the past few years, he's also been offering food tours of Italy already, and we'll see how that's going. Always great to have Rick Orlando on these airwaves. You want to call in, feel free, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando, welcome back. How are you?
Ray, it's great to see you, man.
Man, you've been running like a sprinter here today. What happened?
Well, you know, I like to hit the farms to get stuff fresh. I'm doing a class tonight up in Albany at Different Drummer's Kitchen, tomato, all things tomato.
Yeah.
So I had to go to Black Horse Farms and Story Farms, and I thought I timed it right. But then when I got on the thruway, things were, you know, a lot of boats, trailers and RVs, and so that 20-minute ride from Coxsackie to Albany was more like 35. So I was hustling.
Well, I'm glad you made it, and you had to go back at the last second to get the tomatoes out of your car, and you got those here, and we got some beautiful food here. You know, do you know our ace reporter, Lucas Willard?
Yeah.
Lucas wanted me to ask you a specific question.
Uh-oh.
You ready?
Okay.
How about them tomatoes?
How about them tomatoes?
You know, Rosemary Armeo, right?
Of course.
Okay, panelist on the Roundtable and on the Media Project. She brought in these tomatoes that she grew, and they are spectacular. Good year for tomatoes, yeah?
It's been a good year for tomatoes. Let's see if we're going to need a little rain, otherwise it's going to stop very quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's been super, super dry. And certain places on Story Farms is at the foot of the Catskills, so they have great groundwater there, so they're doing okay. But I know, you know, even my own garden, I have a pump in the stream, and I water them a little bit, but even that, I'm getting frugal with it because it's not a lot of water out there right now.
Up here this way, I think we got 3/4 of an inch of rain the other day.
And you did, like I didn't.
Yeah, really?
Nothing.
Well, you know, we'll get to your topic at hand, and it's funny. You and I sort of set this up before I went on a 2-week vacation. And I must have somehow missed the topic a little bit.
I don't even know what the topic was.
There you go. Okay.
Well, usually it's just the Rick and Ray show.
Was Italian cuisine for summer.
That's it.
That's all right. Hey, before we get into all of that, though, how are the tours going? When was your last one?
I was in Sicily in June with a private group. I decided, working with a couple in Sicily, he's actually from San Diego and she's from Piedmont, but they live in Sicily, that I would specialize in tours of Sicily because Jim Rua and so many of my other friends do Tuscany, they do Rome, they do Venice. Nobody does Sicily, and Sicily is so unique and so different and so much like... Sicily is like coming up to the Hudson Valley in upstate New York when you're in Italy. You don't really know what to expect, and there's all these wacky, cool, creative people and artistic people. It's so great. So... I was in October for 10 days.
Good time of year.
And then I was back in April. And so I basically do April-ish, because it runs into May, and October, 2 tours each time. So 4 times a year.
Now, I mean, there is an element of work here for you, but it must be pretty fun.
Oh, it's such hard work.
Yeah. Well, hey, somebody's got to do it, Rick.
It's painful. No, it's pretty cool. You know, this last run in June was the first time that it was really troublesome in the beginning because that's when the airlines all decided to roll over and play dead.
Yeah.
And my normal routine is Kennedy Airport to Milan to Catania. Okay, it's a day. But yeah. I mean, this was 54 hours this time because for the first time in my life, I decided to try to save a buck and took an American-owned airline to Europe.
Okay. No names, please.
No, as opposed to I like flying some of the Middle Eastern and Scandinavian airlines are fantastic. I don't have to mention their names, but the food is great. The service is great. They're very polite. They come from different cultures. It's much more of a formal culture. I got on the American plane, American company, and my flight departed 7 hours late, which dumped me in Milan with no connecting flights to Sicily. By some miracle, my daughter and son, who were leaving Italy that week, happened to be in an Airbnb in Milan. So I had a place to stay.
Oh, boy.
And then I had to take a train to Florence and get another flight from Florence to Catania. And, of course, that was 5 hours late. So, yeah, I showed up at 2 a.m. on a Saturday, and I left at, like, noon on a Thursday.
But generally speaking, that's an aberration, right?
Normally, it's a two-stepper. It's an overnight flight, and then you have a little breakfast in the airport, and you catch an hour and 15-minute flight to Sicily, and you're done.
I mean, have you considered buying your own 737?
You know, the 737s have had a few issues. I was looking at the reviews, but maybe right. slightly smaller one, maybe a hybrid. A
couple years down the road.
Yeah. Chef, they make electric planes yet? I don't know.
Oh, they're coming. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest today. We talk summer Italian favorites and some of the great harvest that we are seeing. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You brought a lot of food, but because we've sort of been, you've been running, mm-hmm. I think we'll set it all up during the 20 break.
And yet they're all pretty much Italian influenced food.
Yeah. So,
and, you know, the more you travel to Italy, you realize there's a distinct difference between Italian food and Italian-American food.
Yeah.
Italian-American food is big, heavy, rich, and Italian food is light, clean, and fresh.
But if I'm not mistaken, and I've never been to Italy, but, I mean, there are varying cuisines throughout the entire...
Oh, you're kidding me? They're so specific. I said to somebody once, I like putting roasted onions in that sauce. And he said, oh, they do that in Arice. Like, there's one town that
does
it.
You're not allowed to do it.
No, you can't do it. You have to go there. Yeah. They're very, very rigid, and it's kind of amusing. But it's actually nice because the EU does a really cool thing, and a lot of the people that we visit are on this program, is they support people who are doing traditional methods of either growing or producing. Like, we go to a cheesemaker who does this traditional sheep cheese in baskets, actually, where they actually make baskets and make the cheese, and they have the print of the basket. But he said, you know, the health department doesn't really allow that, but we have a special permit because we're historic food preservation. The U.S. needs to understand that better.
So a little flexibility there?
No, I think a little deeper understanding of preserving traditional methods of making food instead of trying to find the cheapest way to make everything.
You make a point. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And, okay, now let's see. This is from Zuzana from Bern. I just made garlic scapes pesto. I'm wondering if I can use the little bulbs from the top of the scape. I was thinking of sautéing and freezing them for later use. Any suggestions?
Well, you could. I mean, they're texturally that's where the flowers are starting, right?
Yeah.
You could kind of make like a capery kind of thing with that by brining them in vinegar. They're going to be a little leathery on the outside, but they'll have some good flavor. You know, a lot of people don't eat a lot of the scapes. It's kind of a trendy thing here using the scapes. Often they're pickled. Where I've been, other places, I've been in Bulgaria. I've seen jars of the pickled ones, but not so much pesto. But, yeah, I think that you can probably pickle them, brine them. You know, they're not the best part of the plant, that's for sure.
Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. Tell you what, let's take a break, and Rick will get a drink of water from his 300-yard run a little earlier, and we'll break out the food. It's a Food Friday. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday, don't you know? Chef Rick Orlando is here, and we are, we're flying by the skin of our teeth, and he's now cutting.
I'm cooking.
What are you doing, man?
I'm making you the ultimate tomato sandwich.
Yeah?
So this is...
That's a hell of a tomato. Look at that thing.
That's a Story Farms tomato from Catskill.
Wow.
This is homemade garlic salt. So this is sea salt with dried chunks of garlic in it. So it's nice and fresh.
Beautiful.
Okay?
Yep.
These are Lay's potato chips.
I've seen those.
So this is a completely domestic local product.
You're putting the potato chips on the tomato.
Tomato sandwich, yes.
I've never heard of such a... Is this an Italian thing?
Well, you know...
Or is this a Rick Orlando thing?
Rick Orlando is an Italian thing. And then, of course, I'm taking good old American mayonnaise.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know if our buddy Rocco is going to be down with us using a lot of mayonnaise on this.
Well, if he's got Southern Italian family, tomatoes and mayonnaise were a part of my growing up.
Okay. All right. Maybe he will. Maybe he'll call in.
In my memoir book that I'm writing, I tell a story about how my uncle once whacked me because I was maybe 6 years old, and he had his big burly guy, and he said, "I got a tomato mayonnaise sandwich." And I was like, and of course, eat it. Anyway, so here's what we have. Zucchini pancakes.
Beautiful.
This is made with a Sicilian zucchini. It's not the long gugut, but it's like a white zucchini.
Yeah.
Grated. And I have for that my ginger barbecue sauce.
I have not seen this, Rick Orlando. The barbecue sauce with cider and glaze.
Yeah, I make that with Nine Pin Cider in a partnership. So that's yummy. This is what they call summer soup. And we could talk about how good soup is in summer. So this is made with the gugutz, cocuzzo, the zucchini that grows 4 or 5 feet long.
Right. And really? They grow that long?
Yeah.
In Italy, but not here.
I grew one. Mine was maybe 30 inches.
Okay. That's pretty impressive.
And you actually cook some of the leaves in there with it.
Yeah. What do they do?
Well, they add a little bit of greens flavor, yep. And they also like spinachy flavor, but they also add a little tannin, so like a natural preservative. So in a lot of the jarred tomato products, you'll see a green leaf in there, and it's not basil; it's a squash leaf because it's a natural preservative that doesn't add like a lemony flavor. Where when we talk about preserving tomatoes, most people will add lemon juice to canning tomatoes.
So the leaves act as a preservative?
The natural tannic acid does.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is just a local tomato on local bread.
That's Rock Hill Bakehouse
mayonnaise. Bread? Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's good bread.
I wasn't sure if
that's
I grabbed bread alone or Rock Hill.
Yeah.
Two of my faves and two of my friends.
Yep.
And there you go, a little harvest snack.
All right. Well, I tell you what, you're not going to have any. You drove all this way. Do you want half of that?
You enjoy it. Well, then,
Mike 3 fell, so Zach, let's go to Mike 4.
I'm back on my mic now.
Okay, fair
enough. I'm on 4.
There we go.
And my headphones are back on. So I set up the buffet.
That's very nicely done, sir. You've done this before.
Yeah, so all of these things that I brought you are very simple.
Yeah.
And they are, as we talked about, summer Italian food. And preserving food, you know, most of Italy, aside from the major northern cities, was very poor and very agricultural. Still is, but in a different way, but, you know, for generations. So they learned how to get the most out of their food. And my grandmother came over in 1914, and I remember I spent a lot of time in the summer with her at her house.
And she went to the Hartford area, too? Or the
New Haven.
Yeah, New Haven. I'm sorry.
And my family farmed. They had a small farm, but they also farmed. They rented property and farmed as well. And we would put up tomatoes and put up zucchini and onions and fried peppers and eggplant salads. It was like a big ritual right around this time of year.
Yeah.
Every weekend, everyone would get together and they'd have, it was like going to a catering party. It'd be 15 people, women in the kitchen, marinating, cooking, and the guys putting the jars in the boiling water and making the tomatoes. So it's been a part of my life.
Okay, now, believe it or not, I'm not of Italian extraction. What's with putting the jars in the boiling water? What do you mean by that?
Well, if anyone out there has canned, and I'm sure many of them have, I'd like to hear your methods and what you do. But traditionally, we would make two things. We would make whole tomatoes, peeled tomatoes, in mason jars.
Yeah.
And we would make what they call passata, which in Italy is basically just like a tomato puree, like a pure tomato. You buy like tomato puree in a can.
Yeah.
Like that. We run them through the hand crank food mill, grind them up and put them in. And we would save a Tropicana orange juice bottles, like any kind of, and we'd have that and we'd put them up for the year. But they have to be submerged in boiling water. And you have to simmer that water about 180 to 190 degrees for about 45 minutes until all the air evaporates out. The lid.
Oh, that's how you do it.
The lid, if you push the lid and it makes like a snapping sound, that means it's not done. It sucks the lid in. The lid will be slightly concave.
Interesting.
And then you know it's done. And then you can just put them on the shelf. You don't have to refrigerate. Or put them in the basement where we had them in wooden crates in the basement.
Wouldn't you be concerned about those jars in the boiling water exploding?
Not at that temp. And once in a while, you'll have a burster. Yeah. But not that many. One of the things my grandmother did, she would have old sheets, and she would cut them into strips. It's funny because I was listening to the Moth Radio Hour up here with the guy with the turban, and it reminded me of my grandmother with her canning because she would weave the sheets between all the glass jars. She had a big, wide pot, so they didn't bang into each other.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest today. It's 800-348-2551. If you would like to call in, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Tell you what, we'll go to Joan in Schenectady, who's been itching to say hello to you, and I'll take a bite of the tomato sandwich. Rick Orlando, say hello to Joan. Joan,
hey, Joan.
Say hello to Rick.
Hello, Rick, and enjoy, Ray.
Thank you.
It is good to be talking. Oh, welcome. What a wonderfully timed show. I've got tomatoes on the vine. I've got potatoes about to be unearthed, and I have some interesting herbs like hyssop. And sweet Thai basil and chives and stuff like that.
Have you let your hyssop go to flower?
Have you let the
it
what?
It is flowering now.
Because the bees just go crazy for it, right?
They love it.
They love it. It's one of the best pollinator plants I've grown.
You need the pollinators, so encourage that.
Yeah. So what's the question?
Yep. Oh, yeah. What can I do to make all of those foods go together into something interesting for like a summer dish, a light summer dish?
Ooh, well, I mean, there's so many things you could do with just beautiful fresh tomatoes and some olive oil and some salt and some herbs, ranging from a simple raw pasta sauce. One of the things I like to do is I'll cut up my tomatoes and put them in a bowl, and it's one of the only times I'll use a garlic press. Because I don't want chunks of garlic. So I'll press a couple cloves of garlic, a little bit of salt, and I'll put some anchovies in it or capers and toss it and let it sit on the counter for an hour at room temperature. Boil some pasta, get a skillet on the stove. When the pasta's ready, ladle some of those tomatoes that have been marinating on the counter with the pasta, and then pick one of your herbs and just throw a big handful of herbs in there. Spin it around a few times to get everything coated. Just warm through and serve it as a dish of pasta, as a salad. What other herbs you said you had? Hyssop and which else? Is it anise hyssop?
I've got some, I think it is anise hyssop. It's so licorice-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when that's younger, before it flowers, is really when you want to eat those leaves. I make little, loose pestos. I call them vinaigrettes because I'll put a little vinegar or lemon juice. And I love to serve that, brush that onto fish when I'm baking a chunk of cod or something. It adds great flavor.
All right.
Oh, you're making me so hungry. Thank you.
Hey, Joan, have a great weekend.
Ray's looking for a napkin somewhere.
I got my own. To show you what a lousy prep person I am, I found a Kleenex here, and I'm using that as a napkin. Okay. And I dropped half a tomato on my pants. But the sandwich is amazing, man. It's
potato
a great
chips
combo.
Are a good touch, right?
And the mayo is perfect for this.
It's a thing. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, on social media, the tomato and mayonnaise sandwiches. Finally, a lot of these things that were old, traditional standby recipes that kind of vanished are now having a new life because of TikTok and all this stuff, because they're fun and they're goofy and anybody can do it, but you can't do it in the winter. You have to do it.
Are you on the TikTok?
I'm on everything, I think.
My kids love the TikTok. I'm so sick of hearing about the TikTok.
It's all the same. It's all advertising. All it is, everything's advertising.
Yeah. All right, Amber, who's screening the calls, is nodding, so you're on the TikTok too.
Okay,
fair enough.
Follow me, and I'll follow you.
Well, the sandwich
is purple haze, dude.
Is that what you are?
Yeah, I think so.
Rick Orlando is our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's grab another call here, and we go to Donna in Del Mar. Donna, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Rick. I have a question about a variation on a dish that I've been making ever since I was in college. My roommate worked for Food & Wine magazine. Mm. It's a Milanese dish, and what you do is you start with pinolas, and you toast them in the oil, and they taste like bacon. You can't burn them, but they taste absolutely exquisite. And then what you do is you take the best pomodoro or Roma tomatoes, chop them up, and of course it has to be in the summertime, otherwise they're anemic in the winter. And then you take flat leaf parsley and you chop that all up. And then you leave it at room temperature for about an hour, and you boil your pasta or macaroni, as we used to say, and you have it, and it is exquisite. And I want to know if there's a name for it, not as important as what are variations I can do on this. Does it need garlic? I tend to do a lot. You know, I tend to do more, and I just want to keep things light and fresh. So
let's take my answer offline. Let's talk about does it need garlic. So you just pine nuts, olive oil, tomatoes.
I mean, yes.
Now, you can do it many ways with garlic. One of the things that I learned traveling in Italy is they eat way less garlic than we do.
Really?
They don't eat garlic. Matter of fact, they think a lot of American television chefs that put these gobs and gobs of garlic in food are out of their mind.
Well, I love garlic. What's wrong with that?
They'll eat it. One of the things I found in Sicily, and you can do this in your sauce if you don't want to make, as my grandmother would say, you want to eat it, you eat it. You don't want to eat it, you know, got to eat it. So she would take a couple of cloves of garlic right in the paper, and she would cook them in the olive oil, like maybe with your pine nuts, and let them cook in there for 5 or 7 minutes and then remove them just to put the flavor in there. She would take garlic and rub it on the inside of a bowl and then make the salad in that bowl to get the flavor.
Nice.
Not everybody digests it well, and I think garlic can be a little windy sometimes, so not everybody's big on the breeze.
Garlic can be windy. That's well said.
You can first of all, you can switch the nuts. I mean, pignoli are beautiful. Most of the pignoli you're going to find out in the markets now are Chinese. The European pignoli are really expensive. And with the drought this year, who the hell knows what's going to happen with half those products.
Yep.
But I have found certain things work really well. Sunflower seeds work really well and are maybe a fifth of the price.
Yeah.
Walnuts work really well. Almonds are really popular. As a matter of fact, one of the great dishes from Trapani in Sicily is Trapanese pesto, which is tomatoes, almonds, and basil.
You're kidding me.
And olive oil and a little garlic.
Wow.
And you actually mash the tomatoes raw, like you're saying, with your cooked almonds and olive oil and garlic, and then you put a big fistful of basil and toss that with pasta. You should look that up, Trapanese pesto, because I think that's a great thing to do that plays on what you're doing, and it's a new dish to add to your repertoire.
Donna.
Lovely. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. While you were chatting amiably with Donna, I had some of these zucchini pancakes or whatever you call it. What do you call them?
Zucchini pancakes, yeah.
Oh, my God. They're crazy.
Zucca.
I put some of this Rick Orlando cider barbecue sauce and glaze on it.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice little thing, right?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. That's good. I love the taste. They have the same sort of consistency as some potato pancakes.
Yeah.
So I love that consistency. What did your grandmother used to say? You don't want to eat it.
You don't want to eat it, you eat it. You don't want to eat it, you know, got to eat it.
So my German-American grandmother would say, you will eat this now, yeah?
Yeah.
That's the way it was in my house.
Yes.
But I like that sort of laissez-faire attitude you guys had. Anyway, this is delicious. What's in these pancakes?
So it's super simple. That is, I had the white zucchini from Sicily, but you can do it with any zucchini or summer squash. And I just grate it on a box grater, sprinkle it with a little salt, and let it sit in a bowl for 10 or 15 minutes, then put it in a towel and squeeze it out to get most of the water out. I think I added one egg, some semolina flour, and a little cornstarch. The cornstarch helps it get crispy. And I might have put a little bit of onion in it. I don't even remember. Or maybe garlic, but very little, just to kind of keep, what else? There's nothing else in there. One of the things about the summer is just tasting the food as it is, because we don't have that much of a seasonal market, especially in the Northeast. It's one season and it's over.
Yeah.
You know, if you live in California, you can get two seasons. So for me, when these squash are so fresh, I'd like to try to taste them. But then at the same time, that's a pancake, so they are a disguise.
You can still taste the vegetable.
Yeah.
That. It's beautiful. Rick Orlando is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. What part of Italy would these be common?
All over, but mainly you'll see more like little fritters and stuff in the south. You know, it's funny, people talk about the Mediterranean diet as this amazing panacea, but I don't think it's that. I think it's the Mediterranean attitude is the panacea, because they fry everything.
Yeah.
But they fry in olive oil. Uh-huh. But they fry everything. They fry. When I was a kid, both of my grandmothers would get the kids to eat stuff that we normally wouldn't eat at five, like eggplant, like zucchini, like mushrooms, because she would fry everything.
Yeah.
And sprinkle some cheese and squeeze a lemon on it, and we would just crunch, crunch, crunch.
There's nothing better than eggplant, man.
Yeah.
Nothing. Rick Orlando's our guest. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Anthony is in Albany. Anthony, you're on.
Hey, Rick. Ray, Rick, big fan of you. I watch you on Instagram all the time.
Oh, cool. Nice.
I just wanted to say that I just had a big bowl of tomatoes, my homegrown tomatoes, some mozzarella, a little oregano, a little olive oil, and a little red wine vinegar, and some plain bread toasted, and that was my lunch.
Sounds
good. Couldn't eat better. I love this time of year.
Yeah,
it's a great time of year.
Oh, how are you? Do you ever try to preserve your tomatoes, or is that something you don't do?
Yes. No. I could talk to you all day. I'm from the Bronx originally.
Okay.
And years ago, I lived in a family house. And every September into October, it was a Salamone feast. Kids would cut. Women would boil jars. My father had rigged up this machine to a colander to separate the seeds, and it was amazing. So, yeah, we used to jar our own tomatoes. And I've tried to do it here myself with some of the plum tomatoes that I also grow during the summer.
So, that's great.
Yeah, and we used to listen to the Yankee World Series games and make canned tomatoes. But anyway, big fan, Rick.
Thanks, Anthony.
Keep teaching us, and see you next time.
Thanks,
care.
Thanks, man, for the call.
You know, he pointed out something really interesting, Ray. You know, nowadays, you can buy a really good quality can of tomatoes anytime you want
in
any store. They taste great. There's some from Jersey, California, Italy.
Yep.
There's crappy ones, but there's good ones, a lot of good ones. And they taste great, and they make delicious sauce. But the ritual and the tradition, what we were talking earlier about, preserving tradition, a lot of the preserving of food, and one of the things that I admire about the next generation coming up, like we're at the Troy Farmers Market a lot selling, a lot of young people that are involved in pickling and brining and drying and smoking and preserving and all this stuff. It saves you a little bit of money. It's a lot of work. But those people that did this generations ago, it was their work. It's not like they had the 9-to-5 jobs, you know, whatever they did. We have to make the food for the winter. Now that we have grocery stores every 10 feet and you can buy food, I mean, you can buy food anywhere in America, it's not necessary. It's pleasure. It's a great thing to do. I try to teach people how to make pickles, how to make chutneys, how to make ketchup. Not because it's cheap, because it's fun. And it teach your kids, and it continues this whole thought process that we can make what is on the supermarket shelves, you can make it yourself.
Okay, and there's more to it than that. There is another angle, and many of us saw what happened at the peak of the pandemic. And when the store shelves started to get, a lot of parts of the world, that's common. In America, not very common, where you walk into a supermarket and there's not that much there. This business about going back to these old methods, and if what you say is true, that the younger people are embracing this, this is good for the future. You never know when you're going to have to do that.
Right. And if you get in the habit of doing it, you always have stuff. My wife laughed because during the pandemic in the beginning, we were calling friends and saying, what do you need? I've got 3 freezers and 6 shelves downstairs full of food.
Yeah?
Because I do.
Well, she didn't call me.
Well,
I was buying Spam.
I like Spam.
I like Spam, too.
Can I give you a quick Spam story?
Do you want to do it on the other side of the break?
Yeah.
All right. Rick Orlando's our guest, 800-348.
I don't really like Spam.
You don't like Spam?
I love it. I have some history with it.
All right. So if Zach is kind enough to play a little bumper, a little bumper music, we'll take a break. No, I'm not going to offer you Spam. But if you want some, I might have a couple of cans from the pandemic.
Yeah.
They have a shelf life until 2037. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rick Orlando is our guest. And we'll be back with more of your calls and such in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday. Chef Rick Orlando is here. He's back in the States briefly. He'll be taking another tour. When is your next tour?
No, we're going in October. I'm going to be going all of October.
Really?
I have back-to-back tours from the 7th to the 25th, but I have my son, Willis, who used to manage the bistro, who actually started working for USCRI, the refugee agency in Albany, ended up in D.C., got married, had a baby, been traveling, is moving to Italy September 1st.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
Up and taking the baby and the wife, and they're moving. They're coming to see us. They're moving Labor Day, the Monday of Labor Day. So, I mean, they're not moving. They're going. They're renting a furnished house, you know.
But, well, you know, I'm not a tax professional, but you'll have family over there. Mm-hmm. And you could probably write off part of the tours and go see them.
It's a business. We write off all of the
tour.
All
right, sir. Rick Orlando's our guest. 800.
It's legal. It's work.
Of course it is. Yes. And, you know, it's a different show anyway. 800-348-2551.
Yeah, what's the guy? No, never mind.
Before I get to the soup, which is crazy, great. Just tell the little spam story first.
Okay, so at the 10th anniversary of New World Home Cooking, we decided that we would do a luau in the backyard.
Yeah.
And it was $10. And I had a guy that worked with me at the time named Mark Noguchi, Chef Gooch, who's very famous in Hawaii.
Yeah.
But he was in culinary school. He was young. He was working with me. And I put him in charge of sushi.
Yeah.
We were passing trays of sushi. So he made spicy tuna and poke. We were doing poke before anybody knew what it was. But people were still looking at the menu saying, what's poke?
Yeah.
Back, you know, 20 years ago.
Poke Salad Annie.
Right. That's a whole nother world.
Yeah.
We were making poke and he made the sushi with, it looked like a spicy tuna roll, little rolls. So
yeah.
People were popping it and eating. And somebody came to me and said, dude, that was the best spicy tuna roll I've ever had. What did you do that made it so delicious? And I said, I'm not sure. Let's go check with Chef Mark. I said, so Mark, what'd you do to make this spicy tuna roll? He goes, dude, that's spam.
Oh.
So he made, chopped up the spam, mixed it with some sriracha and some scallion, a little ginger, and rolled it in a sushi roll in the center. So it looked just like a spicy tuna roll. And people were popping them in their mouth, walking around, and wow, this is, what, tuna? No fishiness. I'm like, no.
At the beginning of the pandemic, my children uniformly mocked me when I started bringing cans of spam home because I kind of saw it coming well before the store shelves got a little sketchy. And so we had tons of it. And they said, what are you doing? What is that? I said, I'm going to fry
it's
some.
It's generational,
up.
But yeah. My stepfather, who's Puerto Rican, used to make fried spam with eggs in the morning. It's okay.
By the way, how did we get on spam on this show?
Spam, spam, spam,
all right,
spam.
Let's take a call. 800. Oh, let's talk about the soup first, and then we'll go to Linda and
Austin
County.
So I just want to talk about summer soup. So this is called summer soup, but light broth-based summer soups, to me, you know, I posted some pictures in a video of this online, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and people were commenting, it looks great. I can't wait for soup season. I eat a lot of soup in the summer.
What's in this before I eat it?
It's zucchini, the 3 or 4 foot long zucchini.
Oh my God, this is
tomatoes
great.
From the garden, onion from the garden, Roman flat beans from the garden, potatoes from a bucket in my yard, and then some pasta and Romano cheese, water, some basil. It's a simple vegetable soup, but in the summer, growing up, we had soup a lot because we had a garden.
Yeah.
And it was like, my grandmother would make pea soup, green bean soup, but it was always broth-based. It was not puree. It wasn't heavy. And we would often eat them for lunch at that temperature, not really hot.
This is amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
And all you taste is the vegetables. And one of the secrets is the vegetables need to be tender, not crunchy. Because if they're crunchy, you don't get this delicious layers of flavor. When the vegetables reach that creamy texture in the soup, they release so many sugars and flavors that just make them. I was eating the squash the other day when we made the soup, and I said, this is like heaven. It's like mousse, you know?
It really is.
Now, really good.
Full disclosure, I had no lunch today.
Oh, you're
so
sad.
I'm really hungry, but everything so far, you're knocking out of the park. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. Let's go to Linda in Ulster County. Linda, you're on.
Hi, Linda.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. I believe it's a pork shoulder, but it's not real fatty or anything. Probably about 3 pounds in my freezer. It's about 5 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to cook it, but because I figure it should probably be cooked in 6 months, I thought. But things shouldn't be in the freezer longer than that.
Well, that's not necessarily true.
That.
You can leave them in the freezer. You can dig up a woolly mammoth in the Arctic and cooked it, and it'll probably still
well,
taste good.
Know, let's as do long that as on another show.
Yeah, as long as it's not oxidizing or getting frosty.
Yeah.
Don't panic. Okay. Don't throw it out. You know. You could always make soup out of it.
Well, what can I do to make something very tender?
I don't know if it's a shoulder or if it's a fresh ham. So that's the difference, right? So the shoulder.
No, it's not a fresh ham.
It's not from the leg. You said it's very lean, that's all.
No, it's
right.
Well, that's I get my meat from a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And he referred to it as, I asked him for a Boston butt.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a pork shoulder.
Well, Boston butt comes from the pork shoulder, which makes no sense.
No, not at all.
But it's kind of there should be a band named the Boston Butts.
Or a baseball team.
Yeah.
Better than the Red Sox, I'll tell you that.
Anyway, so the secret to those cuts of meat is slow and low cooking, right? Really slow and low. Season the outside well, don't be afraid. You know, one of the things that the Latin community makes is what they call pernil. That'll have skin on it, but even without the skin, they'll literally stab it with a little knife and take thin slices of garlic and push the garlic down into it, rub it with salt and garlic powder and black pepper, and put it in the oven at about 275 and go to sleep, or maybe 250.
Yeah.
And go to sleep.
What if something happens to the oven? Don't do that, Linda.
Okay,
stay awake and stay right by the stove the entire time.
I don't think we have the old days of people using bellows to light their stoves anymore. They're pretty modern. But anyway, it depends on how big it is, but a good between 4 and 8 hours of slow and low cooking. And then when it's done, you can see if it seems like it cooked a little dry, because maybe, it could be a free-running pastured pig, which is not going to have as much internal fat. Then you might want to take a couple forks and shred it up and add some vinegar and maybe a little mustard or a little ketchup and make like a pulled pork out of it. That always works. I mean, you could do a million things, but the secret is really nice and slow, really slow. You don't want the internal temperature to really get above boiling, which is 212. Because
the internal temperature
of the meat.
Really?
Because the meat is fully cooked at 160.
Would you ever get it that high?
If you put a piece of meat in a 350-degree oven and let it go for 2 hours, it's
okay.
And that's why it dries out, because it steams, all of the natural juices steam out, and you're only left with protein.
Yeah.
Without the juices. So slow and low, generously seasoned. I think the seasoning on the outside is important. I know a guy who makes some really great rubs for that stuff. But
I know that guy too. It comes
but you
on
know
every
the,
now and
any
again.
Kind of rub like that, and you can just get on the Google machine and start looking at different methods, because that part of meat is cooked all over the world. The Greeks do it. The Armenians do it. You'll find the South America. It's inexpensive and it feeds a family. The whole idea of that kind of cut of meat was a way to feed your family when there was nothing left in the winter.
Right.
You dug it out of the larder. So,
all right, Linda. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. By the way, Rick, you had mentioned that you have 3 freezers at home. How long will you keep a piece of meat in there if you have to?
I've gone into the deep end a couple of times and found some things that ended up in the chili pot.
Really?
But I mean, I'm not going to do a perfect medium rare steak with it, but if they're braising cuts, or often I'll make just broths and stock with them,
Yeah.
If I find, like before the pandemic, when I cleaned out the freezer, I said, oh my God, this leg shank of venison is from, 2012.
Oh, come on.
I'm serious.
No way, man.
It was way in the bottom.
You have it in liquid nitrogen?
No,
what are you
but
doing?
Chest freezers, they never thaw. Chest freezers are the abyss, we call them. That's why I like stand-up freezers.
Yeah.
But I said, I just browned it up and threw it in a pot and cooked it for about 4 hours nice and slow, and then threw some carrots and onions and barley. And I made like a version of beef barley soup with it, and it was great.
Yeah, venison's a tricky thing. And I guess that might be a show we could do sometime.
And it was cooked forever, but... We have one of the weirdest cultures. I'm on a bunch of Italian-American food sites.
I'm sure
you are. People throw away pasta when they reach the expiration date.
Yep.
I'm like, that's dried food. That could be sent to the moon. The dates on food, unless it's dairy, fish, fresh meat, which will say, use by.
Yeah.
Most of it is best by.
Correct.
And there's a lot of lobbying to cut that shorter and shorter so that you throw the food out. You can't even donate it to a food bank.
Yeah.
Which is sad. We throw away in America about as much food as we eat.
Which is ridiculous.
Right?
And at these prices, it's not a wise decision economically.
Yeah. And I, you know, for me, I mean, I believe that, you know, you have to check it out. What could have happened to it in a freezer? I mean, if it's below 15 degrees, what would have happened? Aside from freezer burn, which is visible and you see that, okay, you don't want to eat freezer burn.
Yeah.
But if you wrapped it, especially if you shrink wrapped it, but whatever.
I'm all over the place today, but when you got married, did your wife or did you save a piece of the wedding cake for a year? Because my wife did. And it was pretty bilious after a year. It was not exactly the most delicious thing in the world.
There's a very famous dessert called a trifle, and that's what that's for, is you take that piece of cake and you break it up into pieces, and you get a beautiful tall glass, and you put some pastry cream and some berries and a chunk of cake, maybe a little whiskey. You know, you make layers, make a big parfait with it.
Hopefully I won't have to do it again. By the way, Susanna from Bern followed up with another question about tomatoes, and this time about tomato skins and seeds. Why do they have to be removed before making the sauce? I like to roast whole tomatoes, including skin and seed, with herbs such and such in olive oil, blend and freeze them.
Okay. They don't have to be removed. Tomato skins have a lot of tannins. They make it dry in your mouth.
Yeah.
So it's good to remove the skins texturally. It won't be smooth. Seeds, the most flavor in a tomato is that little, almost like viscous, slimy liquid around the seeds. That's where the most concentration of flavor ketones live in a tomato. If you've ever liked this, matter of fact, I could show you how to do this. There is a Spanish dish called palma tomate. Okay.
Are you actually going to do it?
I'll do it right now, yeah.
All right, let's fire up Mike
3. Mike 4.
What about Mike 5? Zach, is Mike 3 kind of hit the ground? It didn't hit the ground, but it flopped.
Okay.
All right, there
we go.
So
what you're going to do is you're going to take a piece of bread like this, and somewhere we have a clove of garlic, and we're going to take our garlic.
Okay.
Cut it in half, right? And we're going to take the garlic and rub it onto the bread.
Yeah.
And then we're going to take our tomato. It's too bad it's been so big.
That's a big tomato and a delicious one. Where'd you get that again?
Story Farms.
Really good.
Yeah, Story and Black Horse and Davenport. They're my three.
Yeah.
So like you take the tomato and you squeeze it.
Yeah.
And you rub it into the bread. Just like this.
Yeah.
And then they would use the rest of this to cook into some kind of sauce.
Oh, would you look at that?
It's like a little salt.
Yeah.
And some extra virgin olive oil. Oops.
That's why you brought that.
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was vermouth.
Yeah. And no, this is Crete, from Crete, actually.
All
which
right.
is kind of cool. And so, yeah, you get the juicy part of the tomato onto there without really any of the flesh.
Yeah.
And a little salt.
Wow, look at that. Okay.
And take a bite of that.
Oh, I got to eat
that's
that
now. That's a little lunch snack for kids here.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, rip it in half. Okay. There we go. Amber's going to come in soon and have some, right?
Mm-hmm.
No? Yeah, it's really good.
Put that in bread and butter. Mm.
You and I are making a mess of Studio A, just saying.
Have people actually ever cooked in here before?
Well, interesting that you say that. Gail Sokol almost burned the place down one time making baked Alaska. She brought a blowtorch in.
Oh, geez.
And right above you is a fire and smoke detector.
I bet. Yeah.
I was waiting for that to go off and me to be fired. Didn't happen yet. But anyway, we made a good solid mess, and we'll clean it up before Northeast Report, right?
Isn't that a great little snack?
I love it, man. I love it.
That juice of the tomatoes, that little center where the seeds and that viscosity live, has so much flavor, and it's just a great way to use it.
But when you're making sauce, you get those seeds out. I'll tell you what.
Not always. Sometimes.
Years ago, 25 years ago, I don't even know when, I grew tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. That was your last run?
Look at me. I mean, come on. So I said, I'm going to make sauce. Well, I don't know anything about making sauce. So I'm like, okay, cook the tomatoes, throw them in, didn't de-seed them, anything, just threw them in. I'm like, okay, we got to sweeten this up. Going to put some Coca-Cola in it.
You made barbecue sauce.
It wasn't too good. And it really, the acid from the seeds or whatever just did not set well.
Well, the seeds, a lot of people don't like the texture of seeds. They like a smoother sauce.
Yeah.
I'm good with seeds in a lot of things. It depends. When I run through the food mill, it takes most of the seeds out.
Yeah.
I make homemade ketchup. We make the passata, the homemade tomato puree. But yeah, seeds are fine. Eating a lot of little seeds like that, believe it or not, can lead to diverticulitis because they don't break down. You know, cumin seeds, caraway seeds, tomato seeds, strawberry seeds, raspberry seeds.
I did not know that. Well, I knew about that, you know, nuts and seeds and stuff. But
yeah, they lodge in your. They can lodge in.
You can't. It can't affect you if you're grinding.
Oh no,
it
if
up.
You grind it up, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's when they're whole, and they'll kind of go down through the little pipeway and get caught up on something.
This was awesome, man. This was good. Great.
So we didn't really talk a lot about preserving food, but
we
that's
did
okay.
Almost none of it, but we'll do it next time. Well, we know that the leaves from the zucchini can be used
that
for
was
the tannins.
Off, that was off the air.
Oh, we talked about that off the air?
Yes. So that when my grandmother, when we would do the canning of the tomatoes, she would clip the little tendrils or small leaves from the zucchini and squash plants and put one in each of the jars of tomatoes before they went into the water to boil. And I didn't know why. They kind of taste like spinach. They're kind of like a little like a leaf, you know,
yeah.
Like a grape leaf maybe. But they have a lot of tannic acid, and that works as a natural preservative on the tomatoes, which is
I'll be darned.
Because cool. A lot of canning recipes call for adding lemon juice to the tomatoes. A lot of canned tomatoes, you'll see, will have citric acid, and then some won't. Most of the ones from Italy do not have citric acid. Most of the American ones do, and I know a lot of cooks who will say, I won't cook tomatoes with citric acid in them because it's unnaturally tart. It's not as sweet.
All right.
You know?
Well, Rick Orlando, how do people find you on the World Wide Web, et cetera?
I'm very easy. It's R-I-C. There's no K in Rick. RickOrlando.com. I just put a new link up for summer harvest recipes. So if you click on the recipe page, I put, I don't know, a dozen or so. I've got tomato, corn, watermelon. You know, I did the Hudson Valley Harvest Festival for 25 years at Mohonk Mountain House.
Yeah.
And every year I had to feature a different vegetable or fruit.
Yeah.
So I've got an archive of what do you
That's
want to make
cool.
this September?
So it's RickOrlando.com, but no
yeah.
K on that.
No K.
Hey, listen, man, there is an opening on the schedule December 23rd. I know it's getting close to the holidays. There's some talk of a Rocco's Old Fashioned Christmas, Italian Christmas. If you're available, maybe we get you to come in.
I think we can do a Seven Fishes event.
We could definitely do that. Don't bring the mayo. Rocco's going to get upset. All right?
You can try mayo on pizza, see
what he does. You know, that'd be something. Spam and mayo. That's what
spam
I would suggest.
Spam and mayo pie. Hawaiian pie.
It's gotten me
the
kicked
real
out
Hawaiian
of
pie.
Rocco's joint many times. All right, man. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Rick.
Support comes from Sarah's Place Coffee Shop at the Egremont Village Inn. Open Wednesday through Sundays, 8 a.m. to 2:30. Serving six depot roasts exclusively. More information at sarahsplace.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, outdoors on the streets of Troy, over 100 vendors, live music, crafts, community tables, walk-up COVID vaccine, clinic for all ages, Saturday 9 to 2, troymarket.org. And Stone Ridge Orchard, Ulster County, a 200-year-old working farm open for the summer season with a farm stand, farm bar, and wood-fired pizza, stoneridgeorchard.com. That's it for the show. We're over time. Thanks to Amber, who screened the call. Zach Malloy, who is the engineer, yada, yada, yada. We'll see you Monday.